Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast for Shepherd Staff Missions Facilitators. We're continuing our series on mission security. And so I'm here with Tim Dabney. He's our ministry security manager here at Shepherd Staff. And today we're going to focus, and this will be the final of our series, we're going to focus on contingency planning for when things go south.
Well, Ed, thanks for having me back.
Glad to.
Back here at the podcast. And we just love helping God's work all over the globe. And I just want my hats off to the those people who are serving abroad and on the front lines for the gospel. So I just want to give that shout out first. But, you know, everybody should have some sort of contingency plans, whether you live in Orange County or you live in an orange grove in South Africa. I mean, every community has potential threats. Every community has natural disasters that could occur. We don't like to think about them. They're highly unlikely in some places, and other places they're more likely. And to the extent that they're more likely, someone who's a Western Christian worker who's going to go work abroad needs to evaluate their need for the depth and extensiveness of their contingency plan. But they should have some contingency plan, just something as simple as what they do if their wallet gets stolen. I mean, if that happens, do you know the numbers that you need to call to cancel your cards? Do you know where you can get cash without your ATM card or the banks that are open, et cetera, et cetera? So having a contingency plan, especially depending on your location, can make the difference between being a good witness for the gospel of Christ, of being prepared and being someone who can minister to others during a time of crisis, or being part of the masses running with like a chicken with your head cut off. And we don't want to be that. We want to be a good witness.
Yeah, you know, and of all the topics we've covered in this series on missionary security, this of all of them is probably the topic that you need to seek help with. There's no way we can cover this in a few moments on a podcast. This is the sort of topic that could take weeks and months to develop a truly solid contingency plan, depending on where you serve. So we want to encourage you, don't just hear this podcast and think that you're well-trained. This is only the scratching the surface of an introduction in and of itself.
No, absolutely, you're totally right on that. And part of that is evaluating where you're serving. So if where you're serving is an area that's prone to natural disasters like typhoons or hurricanes, then you need to prepare minimally as to the same level that the locals that you're serving prepare for those types of events that happen. And so our good friend Jeff Jackson, who serves in the Philippines, they know what a cyclone or a typhoon is like, and they deal with them every year. So somebody from California may not be familiar with the precautions for that, but if you go into that environment unprepared, it could be deadly and a bad witness. So depending on where you're serving and what the propensity for disaster, propensity for regime change, propensity for criminal activity, that's how you determine the type of counsel you get for your contingency plan. So the things that we'd like to touch on today are things like evacuations, go packs, trusted national contacts, places to shelter in place, and then rally points are some of the things that we'd like to talk about.
Well, continue, Tim.
Okay. Well, you and I discussed previously about, let's start with trusted national contacts. Yeah. So here at Shepherd Staff, we like to send our missionaries out with a planning document for them to help them plan their contingencies. And part of that is developing trusted national contacts. Those are the people that if we don't hear from Ed Campion for 2, 3, 4 days or a week, that we could call somebody on the ground in a country where they're serving and say, have you seen them? Are they okay? Are they in the hospital? Are they sick? Did they get in a car crash, etc.? If we don't know who those trusted national contacts are, or if your family back home or the home church key person who's watching over you, doesn't know who those people are, then we've got no means by way to contact you if you're somehow incapacitated. So developing those trusted national contacts can serve really threefold. If you're detained otherwise, not by the government, or could be, but if for some reason you just can't get to members of your family or members of your team, you could send these trusted national contacts to pick up members of your family or members of your team for you. The second purpose that they serve is they could be people that where you could shelter in place if there's some sort of a regime change where they're looking for Westerners, or they're looking for, if there's some sort of xenophobic activity where they're afraid of white people or their influence and there's some prejudice going on. So it could be a shelter in place issue. Or lastly, it could be them helping you evacuate the country and facilitating that and serving as a communication bridge back home.
So would you suggest, say, a list of, say, phone numbers and maybe vehicle plate numbers and those sort of things that you could keep on record, maybe with your agency, maybe with your home church key person, those sort of things?
Yeah, that type of information is considered by some to be sensitive. And I would encourage you to keep it secure and not just share it with everyone. But for instance, if you have to flee a certain country because there's a regime change, it would be awful nice as a security manager to know which direction you're headed, what highway you're probably going to use, and what the plate number of your car is. Because if anything comes across CNN, or if we hear something in the intelligence realm that's coming over the wire about a minivan with this license plate with a family of white people in it, that might, be some good information to have. So to the extent that you can keep that secure, but let somebody in your home church have just a file, and maybe a manila envelope that you seal and you say, look, unless there's a crisis, don't open this. You don't need to know. And then, of course, you have to update it. You have to at least annually make sure the numbers are correct, et cetera. But I would distribute it to more than one. I would have one person at my church that would be my overseer, somebody from my family, and then possibly house at Shepherd Staff or some other agency that you may be working with. So, that way somebody has access to all that information.
Yeah, and I think we didn't really speak to this issue, but it might be good in that list to also have some trigger points listed. So knowing, under this situation, we would drive out this way. Under Correct. Another situation, we would probably make our way to the airport to get out. Those sort of discussions. Yeah. So there would be some sort of idea of what's happening. Because often in a severe weather situation or in a regime change, phone lines and communication shut down.
Correct.
And so that way there's a clue. Hey, they said if the weather turns this way and they need to, get out of there, they're going to head south on this highway or whatever the situation may be. They're heading towards this other city that's inland or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and that's very true. We make the assumption in today's world that we're always going to have access to a phone, because wherever we go in the world, you and I carry a phone. Every continent, we carry a phone.
That's right.
But the reality is when a crisis occurs, everybody uses the phone, and you know what happens. The grid goes down.
That's right.
So like when things happen in Los Angeles, a big earthquake, the circuits are full.
Yeah.
And getting a call through is it's sometimes not possible. So having that information available is planning ahead and having that that you can move forward without contacting someone. And so that we would know where you were headed.
Now, does that bring us to go bags and that sort of idea, or do you have another point?
It does. It's go bags and the other point that goes with that is routes of evacuation. So really, if you're doing a textbook type contingency plan, you should be prepared to leave any situation within 24 hours. And so that gives you 24 hours to pull together your clothes and your important documents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in certain situations, ideally, you should have a bag or something so that you could go within an hour. So it's got some of your essential clothing items you might need. your maybe a duplicate order of any prescription medications you have, copies of your passport, a certain amount of cash, typically enough cash that would take to feed yourself for a week. And so have this go bag ready that's like a small backpack that you would have ready to go with some a little bit of emergency supplies depending on where you're serving. And don't touch it. It's like other than updating whatever medicines that may be in there, it's just leave the pack in some place where everybody in the family or in the team unit that you have, it's like there's the closet and all of our go packs are there. And if we got to go, we grab them and we're gone.
You know, one of the things that we would leave near our go bags, we had a list because we knew if it came down to that, the crisis would be so overwhelming emotionally, we might make some poor decisions. We actually had lists of things to do that we could just check off.
That's
certain
excellent.
People we had to call, certain things we would have to do with the pets and those sort of things. And just so we would be thinking a little more clearly. I'm not sure how clearly it would have actually played out,
yeah.
But we were trying to have that sort of contingency plan lined up.
And I know that you, serving in the field, have had the go bags and the contingency plan and things ready to go. The other thing that you probably developed in the field, and I think we've talked about it, is having some sort of a rally point.
Yes.
So that if you may be serving in a clinic or serving at a school, but yet a regime change or some cataclysmic event occurs that you can't get home and you can't get, for whatever reason, to the place where you serve. So there may be a third alternative place where you meet with your family or your team, other members of your team. So it could be a place in public. It could be at the house of a trusted national contact. But you should have a redundancy there. It's like, okay, if an earthquake occurs and I can't get to the house, let's all meet at this movie theater.
Yeah.
Or let's all meet at this coffee shop. And so everybody knows that, like, if we can't get through on the phones, and we can't get home or to the clinic or the school where we serve or the church or whatever it is, then this is where we're going to meet.
Yeah, and we built a hierarchy. You know, the first was the children's school, and then we had other points, you know, that if we couldn't be there, there'd be other places. Another thought, and this is happening not just in a disaster, but just sort of in a robbery or whatever, we had a key taxi driver that we always used with our children, and he understood that if my kids ever called, we would pay him when he arrived. There was no need for my kids to have to feel, I don't have any money, I can't call. They knew, get to this guy. We built this long-standing relationship with him. We actually would give him gifts once in a while just to keep that relationship open, that they knew, get my kids home, and we were going to take care of him on the other end. And that was just part of our kind of day-to-day contingency planning.
Well, you bring up a really interesting point, actually, now I think I'm going to feel like I interview you, but... you know, we are called to be the fragrance of Christ.
Amen.
And a lot of Americans are really stinky. And to the extent that we are showing God's grace to these people, like the taxi driver, we are a witness to him. And,
Amen.
You know, he may see in your life and the lives of your children the light of the gospel simply by the way that you treat him as a taxi driver. So building those relationships for your contingency plan is a part of your ministry.
Yeah, well said.
It really is. And so we should be not just looking out for ourselves, but it actually helps the nationals because probably the last point we should cover, and I don't think we covered all at once at the beginning, but is that whenever those regime changes or natural disasters or rioting or whatever is going on, a lot of times the people you are there to serve will put themselves at risk to save you.
That's right.
So remaining behind when you should evacuate actually puts the people that you're there to serve in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And so making an informed decision to evacuate, and it doesn't have to be permanent.
Right.
A lot of people think, I'm bailing. When the thing in Ukraine went down with the separatists that took over down in southern Ukraine, a lot of the families that we serve there left for a week or two.
Yeah.
To went over the border to other Eastern European countries just to kind of watch and see what happens. And then once things kind of like stabilized, moved back into their ministries. And it's not that they were bailing, it's that they were being smart and with the resources that God has given us. And it takes us to the parable of, the three servants that were the master left talents with. And we've been given these resources, and we're supposed to use them wisely, invest them wisely, so that when he returns, we have something to show for it. So the investment that he gives us is our ministry, is our lives. And to the extent that we use those in a wise manner, then we multiply his ministry, and he's glorified with what we do.
I appreciate it. I think of the ministry of Jesus himself, where on several occasions he walked out of what could have been a very violent situation. You know, they were looking to kill him, looking to throw mm-hmm. him over a cliff and such, and he walks out. But when it came time for him to pay that price, he didn't walk out. He laid down his life. So there is that time to leave. There's that time to stay. And that's only going to be a spirit-empowered decision at the point. But for us, and when we were in Kenya, one of our triggers was if we were putting nationals at risk, it was time to leave, to at least pull out for a season until things calmed down. And I think of Paul, one time having himself lowered out in a basket. He needed mm-hmm. to escape before, you know, he became, you know, he exercised a contingency plan
he
from
did.
The nationals, you know, very clearly. And other times he took a beating. Well, Tim, as we begin to wrap up here, is there a document or is there a way to gather all this information in one place? And if you can to gather it in one place, where do you store that?
Well, you know, we mentioned earlier when we were discussing that a lot of people should, or they already have, contingency plans. We here at Shepherd Staff, we use what we call the Field Contingency Plan Questionnaire, which is about a 3.5-4-page document that is just questions. It asks, like, who your trusted national contact would be, what medical information that might need to be known in a crisis, address of where schools where children may be located, addresses of places of service, phone numbers, those types of information. And then it has sections that, makes the person filling out the form determine, okay, my first route of egress would be to take this highway and go through the southern border of my country, or take the northern border, or my first route would be go to the airport to get out, and then have a secondary and a tertiary route of evacuation. So this form, the Field Contingency Planning Questionnaire, is available to anybody who wants it. They can either contact me by email or through our website and get a copy of it if it's not already posted on our website. But if you don't have something similar, you should have a contingency plan that you update annually, and just kind of look it over. It doesn't mean you have to redo it every time, but we do have that document available to help people walk through the different scenarios where they may need to have a contingency plan.
Yeah, it's surprising how often phone numbers change, mm-hmm. license plate numbers change, those sort of things. So it is good to go look that up. Different contexts, other missionaries that you may have planned to travel with have moved on. And so new ones have come in, mm-hmm. and these are the sort of people you may be traveling with. So yeah, absolutely. Would you suggest people store this on maybe a flash drive for keep handy with them?
I would if it was an encrypted flash drive.
Well said.
Just a regular flash drive, I would be a little hesitant to give somebody that advice.
Right.
They can, but at their own peril. But also make sure that there's somebody. It's more important that they make sure that somebody from their sending church or their sending organization has a copy of this, because if they're incapacitated, then that document's not going to do them any good. And a lot of missionaries forget the fact that the number one killer of Americans abroad is traffic collisions. And so, you know, we like to think about the really, you know, the earthquakes and the typhoons and the terrorist kidnappings and all that stuff. It's simple things like traffic collisions and illnesses that most likely will put us out of commission and may not kill us, but we'll be in a hospital and not able to respond. And so if somebody has those contingency plans or those documents in their possession, then there's a lot they can do.
Awesome.
And then one last thing I'll add to this is, like, if you do have children, there should be somewhere in your contingency plan, there should be either a special power of attorney or some sort of emergency guardianship order, so that if somebody needs to come from the States, either the grandparents or other family member to remove the kids from that country. Some countries won't let you leave the country with the children unless you have one of those orders in your possession or a biological parent. So that should also accompany your contingency plan if you have kids in the field.
Well said. Well, Tim, thank you so much for the information. This has been a great series, and we will surely have you back on other topics in the near future. In the meantime, thank you for tuning in to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast here at Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. We love hearing back from you. I think you've had a lot of information on missionary security issues. Please feel free to contact us if we can help you in any way in these areas. God bless you. We look forward to next time.